Hello and welcome to Backstories with me, Keir Whittaker. This week I'm joined by my good friend Mr. Oliver Lindberg. Hello, Oliver.
Hello.
How are you today?
I'm very well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, always a pleasure. This almost got off to a bit of a dodgy start because we got the giggles just before we hit record. So hopefully we've let it all out, and from this point on, we shall be in good form and good spirits.
Absolutely.
So you're working from your home office, as I can see. We've got the video on, and not going into the office these days, of course, because you left the editorship of Net Magazine last year.
I did indeed, yeah, in December.
Yeah, how's it? How's life as an independent freelancer treating you so far?
Actually, I've been really busy doing all kinds of stuff.
Yeah,
you know, I'm doing a little bit of content marketing. I'm founded my own conference, Pixel Pioneers, which is happening in Bristol on the 22nd of June.
You got that plug in very early. We're going to come to that. I promised you.
Very early.
Always good.
Still involved with Generate as well, you know, putting together the program for their conferences.
That's the series that it's kind of the sister conference to Net Magazine.
Yes, it is indeed.
Cool. So we'll come to all of that, absolutely. But let's go back a little bit and sort of how did you get started in, I guess, tech journalism? Was that always the intention, or was it just pure journalism?
It wasn't really the intention. I kind of fell into it, to be honest. I did my training in journalism. I did a postgraduate diploma in magazine journalism. And then a job came up at Future Publishing as a staff writer on Net Magazine. And at the time, the magazine was more like a fanzine for the internet still. It wasn't as much focused on web design and development as it is now. So I then started as a staff writer and kind of made my way up on the magazine. Like, I had all kinds of positions on there apart, you know, except from like the art. I was staff writer, I was deputy editor. I looked after the website at some point, which at that time was netmagazine.com. And then I became editor. Then we founded Generate. Then we did that for a little while, and then I left.
But that's all over a span of years. I think maybe 10 years, was that? You were there?
Yeah, it was 12 years. I was at Future for 12 years.
Wow, so a lot changed in the industry in that time. I remember back, I think I started subscribing to what was at the time .NET magazine. It was when you used to get the internet free on a CD-ROM every month, right? You could put that in your drive and you'd get free internet for 30 minutes or something else, or paintbrushes for, I don't know, some very nascent design package. Or there was a whole bunch of things. But I guess the industry really grew up during your time on that magazine. What do you think were some of the biggest changes that you saw in terms of the industry and maybe the way that people work within that? Because you interviewed a whole bunch of people, and of course people can still see those interviews on the Lindberg interviews on the Medium publication that you still curate. So what do you think were some of those biggest changes?
One of the big things, obviously, was responsive web design. You know, that really took off. You know, Ethan Marcotte's article on A List Apart, and we covered that extensively, how to make your sites responsive, but also with a big focus on user experience. Over the years, user experience became more and more important. You know, what do the users really want? What do they need? What's really good for the users?
Mm. Yeah, and of course, did you interview Ethan about that? I can't remember in the magazine.
I think I did. It's all a bit of a blur now because I did like more than 50 interviews.
Yeah. I think you're right. I think responsive was probably in the last decade one of the big things that really kind of changed the way people think about building for the web.
Definitely.
I noticed as well during the last couple of years that you were there, you looked a lot around sort of apps and kind of a whole bunch of other things. What did you get any sort of trends or thinking about where the industry's going? And if so, what do you think that would be?
About apps?
Oh, just kind of the changing nature of the web and sort of this lack of distinction maybe between, I guess, you know, websites and apps and native and mobile and all this kind of thing.
I think it goes back to the user, because, you know, the users don't really care what they use. or whether they're on a mobile, whether on a tablet, whether on the desktop, as long as the experience is the same and they can access the apps at the same time. That's the main thing, really.
Yeah. No, that's interesting. You did mention earlier that you got involved a few years ago with Generate, which was, as I call it, the sister conference to the magazine, which was rebranded Net a few years ago. We dropped the dot. Obviously not me.
Sorry, I'm responsible for that.
What was the motivation for starting Generate?
Well, we always wanted to do a conference because, you know, the magazine was doing well. There were quite a few good conferences out there. I think at the time, you know, the big ones were Future Web Design, Future Web Apps. But we always thought it makes sense to have our own. So Future then hired a head of events, and one of his first meetings was with me to figure out how we can do an event. And then, you know, we brainstormed, came up with the name, and started in London. And I think that was in 2013, the first one.
I think it was. I think I was there.
Yeah. Yes, in the Connaught Rooms.
Yes, in the Connaught Rooms. Yeah, absolutely. And since then, it's stuck in London, changed venues, admittedly, but also gone to New York and a couple of other cities that you've sort of tried as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what do you look for when you're sort of picking speakers? Because obviously, again, since you've left Future Publishing and Net, you've branched out on your own to run Pixel Pioneers, which is a conference with a slightly different target audience. Would that be fair?
Yeah. Pixel Pioneers is more aimed at small agencies and freelance community event that's, you know, affordable. It's just a one-day, one-track conference, while Generate is in London is a two-day, one-track conference. In New York, it's usually one day, two tracks. And Generate is a little bit more higher-end, more businesses, while Pixel Pioneers is more, you know, the agencies. I'm trying to take it around the country. So the first one is in Bristol, because Bristol has got like an amazing community in digital. And the same with Belfast. There's going to be another one in Belfast on the 16th of November, because Belfast has got a great community as well, but not really a web conference anymore since Build left. You know, yeah. Build was the big one in Belfast. But there's nothing there at the moment.
Yes, I know. Go on.
So you asked what I'm looking for speakers.
Yeah.
I look for speakers that have something interesting to say. I look for content first. So I look for topics that are really, resonating with the industry. So, for example, I always want to have a talk about user experience. Web performance is a big topic at the moment. So I want to have a speaker who can talk about web performance or web animations, you know, that kind of stuff. I'm looking for specific topics and then see who are the best experts out there. At the same time, looking for speakers, you know, you have the issue where there's a lot of speakers doing the circuit. And you have to have some of them because they're the best experts. But I'm always looking for new speakers at all times, you know, speakers that maybe have spoken at meetups and are up and coming. So you've got a nice balance.
Yeah, for sure. I think you're right, though, in terms of that kind of potential gap in the market, if you like, for those maybe sort of people starting out or at the very beginning of their careers. And was that did that influence the name, sort of Pixel Pioneers?
Yeah, definitely. I don't really see Pixel Pioneers as, you know, the big names that you see at all the big conferences. I think we are, in a sense, we are all Pixel Pioneers because, you know, let's face it, how old is the web? You know, still super young. You know, we are still working at the beginning of the web.
It's younger than us, for sure. It's definitely younger than us.
Definitely.
Considerably so.
We are old now.
Yeah, well, yes. Yes, as I creak in the mornings as I wake up, I appreciate that very sentiment. So the first one's taking place in Bristol. That's in June, is that right?
Mm-hmm. 22nd of June.
Very good. And who's who've you managed to snare for the headline acts there?
So we've got Jeremy Keith from Clearlift, which is really exciting. Then we've got Adrian Sumbrunnen, who works at Google. He will talk about web apps and, you know, the user experience of web animations, which will be really interesting. Then we've got the lead experience designer for Minecraft, Tobias Ahlen. I'm really excited about his talk as well. He will talk about how to present ideas that you, so that your client will listen, which I think is a really important subject. Then we've got Bristol's own Joe Leach.
Bristol's own, I love that. About, Mr. Joe, yeah. Live and unleashed.
I always like, you know, when I take a conference somewhere, I always try and have some local talent there as well, because, you know, it makes sense, you're there. You know, who are the best people in Bristol?
I love it, same talent. Yeah, brilliant.
So Joe will do what he does best. He will talk about the intersection of user experience and psychology. Then we've got Nadi Bremer, who's one of the best experts in data visualization right now. Who have I forgotten? Oh, Mark Robbins, also from Brighton. He is excellent at describing how to code email newsletters. How to interactive email newsletters, which is a big thing as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And where can people find out more about Pixel Pioneers?
So the URL is pixelpioneers.co.
Very good.
All the information is on there. I believe there's a workshop as well, run in association with Shopify.
Oh, yes, there is. The day before with our good friends Alex and Piers from We Make Websites. But that sounds really interesting. I mean, that must be taking up quite a chunk of your time, but I know you're involved in a whole bunch of other things. And you've kind of gone back a little bit in terms of content and writing, haven't you? You sort of branched out as well as running the conference. And I know you're doing some editing, book series and things like that for various people out there, tech books. But you've also kind of got the old scribe out and moved into sort of content marketing. How's that going?
It's going really well, and I'm actually really enjoying it. One of the things that I didn't do very much at the end while editing the magazine was writing. Mm. Because once you're in that position as editor, you're just looking at the overall picture and you commission the best people to write, but you haven't really got the time to write anymore. So I'm now doing this again, writing for various, mostly online publications. And it's you know, it's editorial, it's content marketing, but at the end of the day, it's good writing. So I interview people and then write articles on project management, for example, or the best CSS tutorials and that kind of stuff. How to be more productive, you know, productivity tip, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so obviously, you have a background in journalism, and in particular focus on magazine journalism, as you said at the beginning. But what are some of the things during your sort of career to date, that some of the big mistakes that people make when they're trying to write either in let's go back a step. Is there much of a difference between writing in print and online? And what are some of the biggest mistakes that you've seen? And what can people kind of, you know, very quick wins to make their writing better?
I think if you're writing for online, you know, the attention span is a lot shorter. People want the information really quick, so you can't really have really, really long articles. And if you go for longer articles, at least they should be broken up, you know, put some crossheads in, put some images in, make it easily digestible, you know. Don't shy away from writing a list. You know, everyone is saying, oh, you know, don't write lists. But I think a list is actually really to break down a topic.
Yeah.
You know, I've noticed when I write articles and interview people, there are certain sections that crystallize. So you can know there's a crosshead. So
what's a crosshead? I have to interject. What's a crosshead?
A crosshead is a subheading.
You see, going with your technical lingo there.
Like a section heading.
Okay.
The other thing I think is everyone thinks they can write now. And, you know, we've got the tools, but that doesn't necessarily mean that we've got the skills as well. I think articles need editing, you know, because sometimes you can tell, you know, and then sometimes it's just, you know, a matter of language. If it's, you know, I'm German, it's not my first language.
Yeah,
you may have noticed from the accent. Sometimes it's just a really good idea article over to someone else, you know, for some quick editing.
Yeah, so if you, what advice would you give for people who can't necessarily afford professional editors? I mean, is it a case of just throwing it over to a friend or a trusted colleague to read?
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, no, just run it down, run past some peers, you know, friends, colleagues, any kind of feedback that you can get, because I'm sure you will get some tips on how to make your copy more compelling.
Yeah, something we've talked about quite a few times around editing is that kind of tone of voice. And how much role do you think an editor, someone looking at an article, should play in that? When you were editing Net, how much red pen metaphorically did you get out and put on the page for the author?
I think the editor's tone of voice shouldn't really be heard at all or as little as possible, because I want to make sure that the editor's the tone of voice is preserved. Hmm. So when you edit a magazine, there's obviously a house style. You know, there's a certain house style, certain terms and certain words have to be spelled in a certain way. And you have to keep we always had a kind of like colloquial but professional style.
Yeah.
You know, as long as the style is preserved, it's all right. But you need to preserve the voice of the author as well. I think that's really important.
Mm, yeah, no, absolutely. And a lot of publications these days will supply you with a sort of PDF guide to their house style, whether it be the dreaded Oxford comma or the much-loved Oxford comma, punctuation, you know, capitalization, that kind of stuff, weren't they?
Definitely, definitely. We had a house style, obviously, a document that we would send out. And I get that as well now when I do content marketing, you know, depending on the clients, you know, some send me like a detailed document with, you know, what I...
Yeah, exactly. What do you think, just talking on writing just for one brief more moment, what do you think people can do to get better at the craft of writing? Is it just a case of doing more, writing more? Have you any hints and tips?
Definitely, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Just write more. Submit and pitch ideas to various publications. Blog, you know, write yourself on Medium or on your own blog, or best of cases on both, on your site first, and then read cross a post on Medium.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would definitely say just practice it as much as possible and write for different publications and see what kind of feedback you can get.
Yeah, what were some of the best pitches you received and that made your sort of ears prick up and think, oh, even though this person hasn't written, I'm really captivated by their approach. And what were some of the worst?
To be honest, it was always more me reaching out than me getting proposals. Okay. You'd be surprised, but you don't actually get that many proposals submitted to the magazine. The kind of proposal that I'd like to receive is, you know, kind of concise. What do you want to write about? What's your areas of expertise? What's your background? You know, just like a few bullet points, that kind of information, little outline, you know, so I get an idea of what kind of post you want to write about. And sometimes, you know, if an article is based on a talk that you may have given, it helps looking at, having a quick look at the slide deck or the video of the presentation.
Yeah. Did anyone ever send in complete articles and just expect them to be published? Or?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Definitely. People write in articles on spec. Sometimes they are actually really useful. Sometimes, you know, they're kind of like white papers. you know, Net isn't really the kind of publication for that. You know, if you want to publish a white paper, it's probably better on your own site or on your business's site.
Yeah, for sure. You mentioned slide decks there, and that just reminded me that you've also recently, over the last couple of years, ventured out into the, you know, being behind the lectern yourself. And recently you presented at ConfConf, the most meta of conferences, a conference about conferences.
I did, yeah.
How are you finding being a quote-unquote speaker these days?
It's quite interesting. You know, I quite enjoy doing it. It's... to be honest, it's a little bit outside my comfort zone because, you know, as an editor, you know, I'm usually behind the screen, you know, sitting on my own in a room writing emails mostly. But I think it's good to push yourself and to do stuff that's outside your comfort zone. own. I've done a few presentations at meetups and at ConfConf. And it's always gone down really well so far to, you know, share some of the knowledge that I gathered over the last years. For ConfConf, it was about how, you know, liaising with speakers. Any tips, you know, I could share on that. I also recently did like a talk on content marketing, you know, any pointers for people who want to get into that. And was, I think that's the beauty of our industry anyway, you know, all that sharing, you know, everyone shares and is happy to share. And I just wanted to give a little bit of that kind of stuff back.
Yeah, absolutely. The I think it's very rewarding. And I think it was actually, it might have been in this issue, the most recent issue of Net, there was an article on why you should try public speaking. Start off at meetups and the sort of benefits of doing so. So will you be presenting at Pixel Pioneers?
No, I won't be presenting. I will MC the day.
MC, trust you're doing the music as well.
Yeah, of course.
The legendary playlists. yeah. I think I still have the 2014 Spotify Generate playlist on loop.
I spent far too much time on that.
Yeah, you shouldn't admit that. Mind you, you've left now. They can't really say anything, can they? So yeah, content marketing. That's it's a sort of term that's bandied around a lot these days. Anything content, you know, marketing, content marketing. How is it different to just good writing? How do you approach things differently to if you commissioned to do some content marketing than, for want of a better phrase, an article?
To be honest, content marketing is just good editorial, in my opinion, which happens to kind of promote the brand, and that can be done in kind of different ways. You know, it depends. It very much depends on the client. Some clients want to be mentioned in the post, referred to in the post. Some clients are really happy to take a complete step back because they know the article will be published on their site or in their, you know, ebook or whatever it is, and let the content take center stage. And it's very much dependent on the client. But at the end of the day, it should be all good marketing, good content with, you know, with the view of the user getting something out of it. I think that's what content marketing is all about. It's good content for the, they need to get something out of it.
How would you approach a client if they're really wanting to commission you to do something that you feel is a bit too self-indulgent?
I think I'd explain that.
Yeah.
I think that's why they hire me. You know, I know how content works, and I can help with the content strategy. And I will say to the client that it may be better for them to take a step back and let the content do the rest. Because, you know, as I said, to be fair, when the article is on your side, on your brand side, you know, they will discover what you do by default, you know, when they're looking at, when they're reading the article.
Yeah, exactly. Are there any beacons of any companies out there that do really, excluding the ones obviously that you contribute to, that you look up to? It doesn't necessarily have to be in the tech industry. Are there any people, companies that just seem to get it, that people could look towards?
Definitely. I think Microsoft is a really good example. I can't remember exactly when it was, but a few years ago, they hired a few science fiction authors and gave them a fairly loose brief, just said, you know, whatever they're writing, it kind of has to involve Microsoft, you know, and the kind of the research that Microsoft are doing. And they've come up with some really interesting stories, you know, actually really good science fiction. Another piece of content marketing has recently been done by Google.
Okay.
And like, one of our speakers at Pixel Pioneers Bristol, who's like a really good expert for data visualization. She was approached by Google and again was given a fairly loose brief. As long as, you know, her project used Google data, it was all right. So she used some data from Google Translate and came up with some really interesting data visualizations on how people use translations and Google Translate. I think the website is beautifulinenglish.com. It's well worth checking out.
That's interesting. Yeah, one company I always think does sort of content marketing really well is the Hyatt Denim Company. I know they've got a whole bunch I recently read the book that David Hyatt wrote about newsletters, email newsletters. It's a very quick read, but very interesting how they kind of put a lot into the content and that kind of the way he framed it was that kind of give and take. You know, for every, you can push a couple of things, but then you have to kind of give over maybe 10, 12 other things in terms of content. And I can never say it, reciprocation or whatever, where you curate good content, but then you weave your own story into it. So yeah, I think Microsoft didn't they commission some, I think it was Microsoft a few years ago, where they got a whole bunch of very well-known web designers and they came up with these kind of posters for New World's Fair. Does that ring a bell? I'll link it
I think
up.
So.
Yeah, there's some interesting stuff out there. I guess...
Anything can be content marketing. You know, it doesn't have to be just an article. It can be, you know, ebooks. It can be videos. It can be games. You know, to be honest, the Lego movies are brilliant content marketing.
I was just so disappointed by the ending of the Lego movie. Anyways,
which one, the first one or the Batman one?
No, I haven't seen the Batman one. I want to. I'm shocked that I missed it.
But I've just seen it.
On your own?
With my daughter.
Oh, okay.
With my daughter.
You're sure. Excellent. So, yeah, you are available for hire if anyone's interested. Great content marketer, great editor.
I am.
You know, what else do you do? Anything else? Oh, you drink alt beer or alt beer? Regularly
on I our occasionally trips to, drink Altbier.
On to our trips to Düsseldorf. I see you're wearing the Beyond Telleran t-shirt there.
Oh yeah, I can be seen at conferences.
Yes, yeah. Happily promote other conferences via t-shirts as well. So yeah, I think that's kind of we've covered most things. And just to reiterate then that Pixel Pioneers is taking place in Bristol in is it June 22nd?
22nd, yeah, that's
excellent.
Right.
And tickets are still available?
First one, tickets are still available, yes.
Not many, though, not many, this is fair to say.
I'm looking forward to it, It's the first one, it's the M-Shed, it's a lovely venue at the harbour.
It is lovely, yeah. Bristol's great. I mean, you didn't choose it just because it's 10 minutes down the road from where you live on a train, did you?
No, I didn't. As I said... You know, Bristol has got a great community. But at the same time, I chose it because it's here and I wanted to give something back to the community. You know, yeah. I've been here for, I don't know, about 15 years, pretty much like that. So,
yeah. It is great. I think the scene in Bristol is really vibrant and just not the tech scene. I think just the culture and art scenes are pretty buoyant there. And it's just a nice city to be in.
Not forgetting Bath as well, Bath and Bristol.
Of course. Yeah. But just to round off then, I've got my quick five questions. I'm going to put you on the spot and, you know, you will be punished for hesitation. I don't know how.
What's my favorite color?
Have you seen these? That's not fair. No. Here we go. Inbox zero or inbox overload?
Kind of in between.
In between? What is that?
I wouldn't
sitting
say
on the
it's,
fence?
It's not overload. You know, I haven't got inbox zero, but I go through my email and, you know, label them and put them in folders. But I couldn't do it.
Label them
zero,
and put them in folders? That sounds very efficient.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
It works for me. Yeah.
Okay, I like that.
Okay.
Yeah, Craig Lockwood just straight off the bat said overload. He has no system, seemingly.
No system. I couldn't do it. I receive a lot of emails as part of my job.
Yeah, I think we all do. What's the one app or service you can't live without?
I probably would say Twitter still, to be honest.
Yeah.
You know, there's been a lot of talk about Twitter not being that useful anymore, but I still get a lot of leads from Twitter, you know, just monitoring what people are talking about. Admittedly, these days it's a lot about Trump and Brexit.
Yes.
But I still get a lot of leads out of it, and you know, also still useful as a marketing tool.
Mm. Yeah, I think a lot of people would agree with you there. Okay, so espresso, yeah. Macchiato, flat white, or something else?
Tea.
Tea.
Tea, please.
Always with the
I'm
tea.
I'm a tea drinker. I don't really drink coffee.
That's unbelievable, really. What's any, like, builder's tea, English breakfast, Assam?
Yeah, it's usually English breakfast or Assam. You know, like a peppermint tea as well.
Tea doesn't kind strike me as a kind of popular drink in Germany. Am I wrong?
Yeah, I think I got used to drinking tea over here. It's not a great drink to drink in Germany. First of all, it's overpriced. And then you usually just get a hot glass of water.
Yes, with the bag on the side. Yeah.
Yes, it's just kind of weird. And often you don't get any milk either. So if you're into drinking your tea with milk, maybe not drink it in Germany.
Yeah, you can buy a tea for like €4 or an Altbier a litre or for like €1. It's crazy.
Yeah, yes.
What's the most useful piece of kit in your kind of everyday bag?
It's probably by my MacBook Pro now that I recently acquired.
Recently acquired sounds a bit dubious.
No, I bought it on eBay, you know. I really needed a laptop because yeah. I needed to be mobile. And when I left Future, I had to give all the kit back, obviously. So I bought a MacBook, you know, just went on Facebook asking, you know, what people were recommending, and a lot of them recommended, you know, Chromebooks and that kind of stuff. But I really got used to my iMac at home.
Mm.
So I bought a MacBook off eBay, and really liking it. It's kind of the same way of working, and it was useful as well for my conf presentation.
Yes, it's an essential piece of kit for the speaker amongst us. Yeah.
Yes.
Finally, what are you doing the rest of the day? What are you going to do straight after I hit stop on this?
So there's more Pixel Pioneers planning. It's just 3 weeks away now. So final bits of organization and marketing. Also getting ready to launch Belfast. You know, as you probably know, I had a call for speakers that ended like about a few weeks ago.
Mm.
And I had a lot of really good submissions. So I'm just going through them and making sure that we have another like well-balanced lineup in Belfast.
Very cool.
It's going to be exciting.
Very cool. Well, that's come to our sort of half hour.
I'm also going to meet up. That's one of the beauties of running an event. Two of the meetups, and there are a lot of meetups around here, to spread the word about your event and you know what you're doing, and meeting people face to face. I think that's invaluable.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I know you've been doing the circuit really of kind of the Southwest meetups, and it's
yeah,
I think it's clearly paying dividends. And so
there's so many. I had no idea. There's so many.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. You could go to a meetup or conference every day of the week, literally. Maybe two.
Yeah. And eat free pizza and drink free beer. That seems to be it at meetups, pizza and beer.
I'm sure your motivation is purely to spread the word about Pixel Pioneers and not the beer.
Absolutely.
Or pizza. Yeah, always. No. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for joining me. As you said earlier, pixelpioneers.co.co, people can find out more about the events, the upcoming Bristol one, and of course Belfast later in the year. Designed by our good friend, the real Wiggo, Mr. Richard Wiggins, of course.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. A sterling job on the design front there. And,
very happy with that.
If people want to find out more about you, oliverlindberg.com, I believe.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And at Oliver Lindberg on Twitter.
Yeah. I can see what you're doing there. It follows a pattern. It's all good. well, I would love to have you back in the future, but thank you for joining us, and we'll catch up soon.
Thanks for having me. Thank you.